heading down south where they use the slide machine.
$180. You go down, you pay your money, and you take the classes, and you can put on a TV show. I'm like, wow, really? All right, yeah, man, that would be cool. I'd love to do that. And he's like, well, and then I was like, well, the one problem is I don't have $180. And he says, well, would you do it? And I was like, yeah, absolutely, I'd do it. And so next thing I know, he's writing me a check. And he's like, all right, I want to see you on TV. So all of a sudden, I had a TV show. I'm like, oh, my God, you know. I'm a conspiracy theorist. I'm not an AV tech. I don't know anything. I took the classes, and the teacher that I got was just awful. I mean, he didn't even want to be teaching anybody anything. And I got him for everything. By the time you get up to the mini studio, you've got to go through the camera training, the lighting training, the editing training, and then another camera, and then you get to learn the studio. And I got the same teacher for everyone, and he was just horrible.
Oh, man.
Like, for the studio, it was a three-hour, I think it was supposed to be 3 days. And I think he spent an hour with me, and about 45 minutes of that was showing me how to move the lights. So I never did learn the controls. So there, you know, that explains why when I walked in, I had no idea. But I'm willing to just jump into things like this. You know, I don't mind jumping in with both feet. And so I went ahead and, like, all right, let's do this thing, you know, even though I had no idea what button to push.
I kind of get the sense that we're moving away from a financial economy and into a reputation economy. So it almost seems where somehow people just end up getting supported. Like let's here's an example. If you were if you're a famous actor and you go on television, right, say on the Tonight Show, they want you there because you're famous, but you get paid an honorarium for just appearing on television, whether it's for a minute or for 20 minutes, you still get paid like $2,000,
right,
just for being on the show. Well, that's an example of the only value that you added was your reputation to the show, and that's what they paid you for.
Right.
So that's an example of that cusp between a financial economy and a reputation economy.
Paris Hilton gets $18,000 to go to a party for 15 minutes.
Yeah. I used to be able to say that doesn't make any sense to me, but now it makes a lot more sense to me because I'm understanding that we're moving away from financial economy totally. I mean, you know, ever since we got off the gold standard, we've been in a slow decline, and we're moving into an economy based purely on reputation and on what kind of information you project and, you know, your personality and who you are. And because of that, then it becomes really important to kind of get yourself out there and in whatever way. Like if you're a painter, it's really important that lots of people see your painting, even if nobody buys it, because then they'll know your name and later on you'll sort of trade off that awareness for, rent somehow.
Right. And this was a thing that was also described in the Celestine Prophecies on how people would start paying others for leading them into synchronistic events. And I always thought that was a great way to transition from this paradigm into the next one, because we haven't been able to release ourselves from the spell of money yet. But it would be a great transition when people would start paying for synchronicities, like suggested in the Celestine Prophecies. And that's really, I'm having faith in that. And it's been working, that I do always get exactly what I need. I'm always broke, but I always have what I need. So, I got to tell you a funny story. I just got attacked by some author. And here's one of the pitfalls or what can happen when you become popular.
Mm-hmm.
This author just wrote me a scathing letter about stealing all of his ideas and that he was, you know, threatening to sue me. He wrote the radio show in Sweden that I'm on and told them that I was stealing all his ideas and, you know, just really on this massive Freeman smear campaign, and I have no idea who the guy is. I don't know what he wrote. I don't know anything about him. And he's just been attacking me recently, and I think that's just crazy that somebody could consider, I mean, information is information, and you come to realizations from the information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just felt like telling you that.
Right, you're not writing a fictional novel here. You're saying, well, this happened, and this is probably what it means.
Yeah, yeah, and honestly, because I've never read the guy's book or seen his website or anything, I went looking for him afterwards. There's a guy named Matthew Deleuze. I don't know if I want to give him too much publicity, but there was nothing on his website, and there were no interviews or anything, and so I couldn't figure out what it was that I had said that made him mad. But my stuff came out a full year before his stuff, so I don't know. I think he's got it backwards. But he's just digging himself a hole. But see, there again, there is somebody that feels to restrict knowledge so that it's his, you know, as if he was the only person that's allowed to think of this thing and therefore gets to be paid for it. And now he's making himself major trouble. Because the radio show in Sweden, doesn't want to have him on anymore. You know, he wrote a scathing letter to them as well for not throwing me off the air, and so they just removed all his interviews from their website and just pretty much wrote him off. So he just cut off his own nose to spite his face.
Yeah.
But because he wants to restrict the knowledge, because he's still lost in the mentality of that we need money to, or that you got to restrict knowledge to have money.
Right, and that's really looking at. I mean, you're really assuming that we're living in a really small enclosed system. If you look, because every time that somebody else Googles for something, right, and they run across you, that's a whole new person that's never heard of you that's suddenly exposed to your ideas. So by putting your ideas out there connected to your name, you're just growing your audience. You're not, there's no way that you're going to lose value by doing that. I agree.
And I only charge for work that I've done, like on the DVDs that I sell. Those are ones that I worked. Those aren't just me sitting there talking with a guest. You know, there's something that I put a lot of effort into. All the shows with just speaking with the guests, you know, those are straight up on the internet as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that I'm surprised more people aren't doing. I mean, because at this point, you can pretty much do what I'm doing straight from your laptop, you know? Even you could put on an Alex Jones show yourself, you know, because his format's really simple. He doesn't even use a blue screen or anything, and you could do that from your laptop with your little camera on your, and you know, the whole world could be putting out views, so that we could start to unify in humanity. And I don't understand why more people aren't putting themselves out there more. And I'm thinking to myself, I haven't spent a dime, you know.
Yeah, I watched the first half of Endgame last night, and I was like, he's talking about the Georgia Guidestones. You know?
I know. I couldn't believe that. It's like, that's the new thing. And
right.
I had no idea about that either when I originally. Yeah, that one shocked me a little bit.
Do you ever get the feeling that not that people are ripping you off, but that you're pointing out things that nobody had paid attention to that suddenly become important?
I think so, and even my artistic style was adopted by Alex Jones. So right after he re-released his Bohemian Grove, it has clips in there that are straight from my film, straight from Corporate Logos. So I've affected Alex in many ways, in that one, they adopted my film style. Now, like I say, you showed me my first documentary, right? I had never seen a conspiracy documentary until you showed me that Alex Jones film.
Yeah, did I show you Waco too, the 4-hour Waco documentary? I know I had it at the time, but I don't know if we watched it or not.
I actually had seen that one with The Bride of Christ. I had forgotten about that, but I did actually see that one when I was living with Rose.
Right.
But I had never seen, you know, so here I just did it artistically the way I wanted. And now Alex has, you know, had to adopt my style. And they asked me, you know, is it okay if we just, you know, take some of the scenes out of your movie and put it in ours? I'm like, hell yeah. You know, this all is amazing to me, you know. I'm not one that's out here being an ego. I think this is all just astounding. And then another thing that I did to poor Alex was that I give everything away for free. And so all of a sudden he had to do that, much to his own dismay, because I heard him on Jeff Rentz kind of upset about the fact that, you know, everybody can just go watch Terror Storm on Google, and it cost him $90,000. And but I think that was my fault, because he just, you know, this is all just astounding to me. Like, you know, that's the thing. We're just ordinary, average Joes, and we have ideas. And now in our new 21st century, we can present these ideas to people. And it's just a fantastic time to be able to communicate with the world. I find it just amazing, and I can't believe I'm doing it. You know, I never thought that this would, and I like I say, I don't get used to it. I'm nervous every time. There's not one time I'm sitting in front of that TV camera I don't have sweat pouring down my side. I try to act cool up there, but, you know, this is not something I would have really thought of doing if I hadn't been at the meeting with the secret ruler of the world about the extraterrestrials. You know, this would have never happened. And that's another thing that's just so important, is you never know what little event in your life is going to alter it so dramatically.
That's also true. So what inspired you? I've got, I notice here that one of your recent comments on your website is the question, what or who inspired you to interview Eric John Phelps? And what's your view on him?
Oh. you know, I had not listened to Eric John Phelps before I asked him on the show. All I knew is that he was into the Jesuits, and I wanted to learn about the Jesuits.
Mm-hmm.
And then before the show, I always read everything they've got or watch all of their videos, or I get totally inundated for a week into the topic of my guest. And doing that for Stuart's Wordlow is pretty much a mind game. Boy, that was a trip when I got into Stuart's world. But Eric, once I started listening, I was like, oh my God, what have I done? You know, and this is going to be so strange to hear such a fundamental Christian perspective. But I found him very intriguing. And some of his ideas are so out there that it was perfect for the Freeman perspective. So, you know, I did not know who Eric John Phelps was when I invited him on the show. And I don't mind. I mean, if I'm going to have Satanists on, I want to have fundamental Christians on. I don't, you know, I'm not trying to, once again, you know, make any belief systems myself. I'm just want to create wonder. But so, yeah, I was a little shocked when I first started hearing what he actually was saying. And then I went, well, you know, he's got some really interesting stories about what he thinks about the geocentric universe and the inability to actually launch a nuclear missile. And so, yeah, to be honest, I was a little shocked myself and went, oh, God, what did I do? And then right at the end of the show, and this is one of the downfalls of being live, sometimes words just come partying and come out of my mouth. I don't know where they come from. And the last words I say after this fundamental Christian episode is, well, Halloween's on the way, so party hard. Like, oh, God, what did I just do? So now I'm trying to figure out how to get that show. I want to edit those last words out, but I probably should just leave it. But I don't know how that came out of my mouth. It just came out. It just kind of, yeah.
Well,
I don't sleep after my shows either. Like, after I'm done with the TV show, I will not sleep that night. I don't know what it is. I don't feel all antsy or anything. I guess adrenaline or whatever, but I don't sleep after my TV shows.
That's interesting. It's like you just feel like you're buzzed from the energy of having sent all that energy out there and it coming back to you or something.
That's what I think, yeah.
Okay. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you want to talk about as far as, like, developing, I don't know, developing ideas or keeping it fresh? Or...
Well, it's gotten so easy now for us to do this type of thing at home, to you know, editing systems at home. And I think that the whole planet should be putting their perspectives out there so that we can all kind of get an idea. We're all so isolated now in the 21st century, and nobody knows what anybody else is thinking, and everybody's untrusting of everyone else. And I think that we should take this opportunity of having the internet, and it's not a difficult thing to do, to put together some ideas and to get friends or whatever and just talk. And don't worry about who's listening or if you're going to be the next big thing or anything. Just get your thoughts out there, because I think that's the most important thing for our time right now, is for us to communicate with one another and let each other know what we're thinking. I mean, it's awesome that people in Norway and even Singapore, I've had people in Singapore order my DVD, are hearing, you know, that I disagree with George Bush, you know, and I want the world to know that all the Americans are not these, you know, warmongering haters. And this is very important against the Illuminati scam, because their whole deal is to promote mindsets and say, well, here, all the Americans are fast food junkie, drug doing fat people on the couch, you know. And
right.
So we can dissuade all of that type of thinking by putting ourselves out there. And another thing is that everybody's so afraid of everybody right now, and you've got to confront that fear in order to do this. You know, in order to put on a radio show once a week online, you've really got to confront your fear of others, of what they're going to think about you. And that's one of the greatest powers that the governments have over us, is our fear of being embarrassed. And so I want more and more people to get out there and just inundate the internet world with their thoughts and their, and who cares if you're, you know, become a star. That's not the point.
I want to talk about Ireland. Specifically, I want to talk about the famine, about the fact that there never really was one. There was no famine. See, Irish people were only allowed to eat potatoes. All of the other food, meat, fish, vegetables, were shipped out of the country under armed guard to England while the Irish people starved. And then, in the middle of all this, they gave us money not to teach our children Irish. And so we lost our history. And this is what I think is still hurting me. You see, we're like a child that, being battered, has to drive itself out of its head because it's frightened, still feels all the painful feelings. But they lose contact with the memory, and this leads to massive self-destruction, alcoholism, drug addiction, all desperate attempts at running. And in its worst form, becomes actual killing. And if there ever is gonna be healing, there has to be remembering and then grieving, so that there then can be forgiving. There has to be knowledge and understanding. All the lonely people, where do they all come from? An American Army regulation says you mustn't kill more than 10% of a nation, because to do so causes permanent psychological damage. It's not permanent, but they didn't know that. Anyway, during the supposed famine, we lost a lot more than 10% of our nation through deaths on land or in ships of emigration. But what finally broke us was not starvation, but its use in the controlling of our education. Schools go on about Black 47, on and on about the terrible famine, but what they don't say is in truth there really never was one.
Excuse me.
Where do they all come from?
I can tell you in one word.
Oh, the lonely people. Where do they all come from? So let's take a look, shall we? The highest statistics of child abuse in the EEC, and we say we're a Christian country, but we've lost contact with our history. See, we used to worship God as a mother. We're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. Look at all our old men in the pubs. Look at all our young people on drugs. We used to worship God as a mother. Now look at what we're doing to each other. We've even made killers of ourselves, the most childlike, trusting people in the universe. And this is what's wrong with us. Our history books, the parent figures lied to us. I see the Irish as a race like a child that got itself bashed in the face. And if there ever is gonna be healing, there has to be remembering and then grieving, so that there then can be forgiving. There has to be knowledge and understanding.
Oh, lonely people.
Stand on the brink of a great achievement. In this island, there is no solution to be found to our disagreements by shooting each other. There is no real invader here. We are all Irish in all our different kinds of ways. We must not now or ever in the future show anything to each other except tolerance, forbearance, and neighborly love.
Our traditions. Everyone here knows who he is and what God expects him to do.